These words that I say, I'll close my eyes to everyone but you, and when I do, I'll see you standing there. A new love affair, then I'll close my eyes to everything that's gay. If you are not there, ah, to share each lovely day.
And you don't hear none of those stations playing them. Ask why. In fact, where are those stations today? Somebody better ask somebody that. The people that's most affected by this war.
From animal rights and the anti-war movement to civil disobedience and culture jamming, Justice or Just Us examines law, equality, public policy, and social activism. Tune in Thursdays 8 to 9 a.m. on KUCI in Irvine and KUCI.org.
Weekly Signals, every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Join me, Mike Casper, and Nathan Callahan for the best in reality-based radio. That's Weekly Signals. Check out the website at weeklysignals.com.
Get the lowdown on the publishing industry. Listen to Writers on Writing, hosted by Barbara DeMarco Barrett. She talks to anyone who's anyone in publishing. Thursdays, 5 p.m.
on KCI-FM in Irvine.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And welcome again to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI-FM. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. And Writers on Writing features authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and the business of writing. Today, my guests are Tucker Shaw and Kerwin Rockefeller. First up is Tucker Shaw. And before I introduce him, though, I want to tell you that we have a fund drive going on here at the station that helps us pay the bills. It helps us keep the equipment running. It helps us pay the phone bill, the calls to the guests. Most of the people on the show are not in the studio. Today we have one in the second half. Kerwin Rockefeller's here, but mostly people are everywhere around this country and sometimes in other countries. And to pay those phone bills, we need funds, and your funds keep us going. We have all kinds of premiums that you can request tickets, CDs, classical, blues, rock, just all sorts of things. If you call during my show, I will have a personal gift for you that I will send to you. Just tell whoever answers the phone to give me your name and email, and I will make sure you get a gift from me, as well as if you take a premium. So you have an added benefit to pledging during this hour. Call 949-824-5824. That's 949-UCI-KUCI, and help to keep us on the air. Anyway, my first guest is Tucker Shaw. Tucker has held many interesting writing gigs. Most recently, he's been a dining critic for the Denver Post. His last book was Everything I Ate, A Year in the Life of My Mouth. And his current book is Gentlemen, Start Your Ovens, published by Chronicle Books. Hi, Tucker.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
It's great to have you. I don't know where I first saw your book, Everything I Ate, but when I did, I thought it was such an interesting concept for a book, because it's a day in the life of your mouth for a year.
For a year, that's right. I started on January 1st of 2004, and I took a picture of everything I ate for that entire year until December 31st. I think I started out with cold pizza, you know, somewhere late in the morning on January 1st, and finished up with a little bit of caviar and champagne on New Year's Eve.
How did you come up with this idea? Where did it come from?
It came from, first of all, I'm obsessed with food. I think that's probably clearer. But to me, food is so revealing about who we are culturally. And I thought to myself, you know, we are going through a really strange time in America right now. And there's going to be a day in the future when people are going to want to know who we were. And when I studied history in college. The things I always looked for were the more mundane stuff, things like food. What did he eat? What did they serve at parties? What did they grow in their gardens? Because it gives me sort of a connection. So I've pictured somebody maybe 500 years from now somehow digging this up from hopefully not the ruins of New York City, but you know, finding it in a library somewhere and understanding a little bit about who we were in America at the turn of this century.
Now, did doing this project influence what you ate? Or did you just really eat whatever you ate and didn't pay attention to the fact that it was going to be in a book?
You know, I had to make a deal with myself right at the beginning that I was going to be honest and complete, because it would have been really easy to try and make it more interesting or less embarrassing, perhaps. I mean, there were certainly times late in the night when I'm having yet another donut when I thought, I don't know if I really want everybody to be able to see me right now. But I thought, you know, if I'm going to do this, I want to make it complete. I want to make it real. And I'm a pretty adventurous eater anyway. So, you know, the variety that you'll see in there is sort of how I live to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so you had the idea for it. Then what? Did you think of Chronicle immediately, or did you get an agent first, or what happened?
I didn't. You know, I just started doing it because I didn't know exactly what form it would take. I wasn't sure if it was going to end up as a book or just sort of as a bunch of files on my computer. So I started doing it for maybe 3 months, something like that. And somewhere around April or the end of March of that year, I was having dinner with some friends of mine. And you know, it's always kind of obnoxious to pull out your camera in a restaurant and start taking pictures, but that's what I was doing. And so somebody else at the table said, "What are you doing?" And I explained the project to him, that I just wanted to do a comprehensive year of what one person eats. And it turned out that he was an editor over at the New York Times. And I had never met him before, so it was a nice bit of serendipity. He ended up writing a short story about it in the food section, the New York Times, a couple of weeks later. And within a couple of days, I, you know, had hooked up with an agent, and before too long, we hooked up with Chronicle. You know, we shopped the idea around to a bunch of publishers, but Chronicle was the first publisher that was interested, and also the only publisher that was interested. And it actually seemed like a perfect fit, because, you know, they kind of do a lot of quirky, you know, sort of art-driven books that other publishers might shy away from. They were also willing to do it in full color, which I thought was really important for the project. I didn't think publishing all these photographs in black and white would have the same impact.
No, it wouldn't have worked. This is wonderful. And Chronicle, yeah, they do. They take wonderful chances on books.
You know, they, you know, obviously, like every other publisher, they're concerned about selling a lot of copies and all that stuff. But they also have a little bit built into their plan, I think, to do things that just interest them. And you know, if it sells a lot, that's gravy. But they want to be associated with projects, I think, that keep them interested while they're putting it together, but also that they think are kind of cool. And for whatever reason, they saw some coolness in this project. So I was really happy to hook up with them.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm here today with Tucker Shaw, author of Everything I Ate, A Year in the Life of My Mouth, and Gentlemen, Start Your Ovens, Killer Recipes for Guys, published by Chronicle as well. Talk about that book, your second book.
Well, this book is Gentlemen Start Your Ovens, as you say. It just came out a few weeks ago, and it's a cookbook. So pretty straight, much more straightforward than Everything I Ate. I was looking at the pictures in Everything I Ate, and while many of them are out in restaurants or out on the street or, you know, just kind of thrown together at home, there was also a lot of cooking in there. And I thought, you know, I'm not a chef. I'm not a trained cook in any way. But there are a few things I can do in the kitchen, and I wanted to kind of codify the recipes and put them together in a way that was, again, you know, in the Chronicle vein, a little bit quirky, a little bit try to impose some wit, you know, into recipe writing, and put together a collection of these recipes, and then we decided to publish it together. So it was kind of a perfect, you know, a marriage there.
Again, without an agent.
No, with an agent.
That's
one piece of the puzzle. After that story was published in the New York Times, I hooked up with the agent, and he, Dan Mandel, out in New York, and he helped me hook up with Chronicle. And then I just sort of stuck with Chronicle for this book.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Is it better to have an agent to take you through the book process or no?
You know, that's a good question. For me, it was, because I wasn't exactly sure how everything worked. And I wanted to have somebody, obviously, with more knowledge than I had about the industry and the whole experience, just so, for one, I didn't get totally ripped off, and for two, just to know that I was hitting all the marks I needed to hit on the way to getting a book done. And, you know, since then, he and I have developed a relationship, which I think is the most important thing when figuring out who your agent is going to be, is to have chemistry and to be able to brainstorm together. At least for me, that is how we've been able to put together, you know, these two packages and actually a third one, which will come out next year.
What is that one going to be?
It's going to be a follow-up to Gentlemen Start Your Ovens, and it's going to be called Gentlemen Start Your Blenders, and it's going to be a recipe book of cocktails.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
This is so fun. So, are you a cook? Are you a chef as well?
I'm not a chef. No, my day job is as the dining critic for the Denver Post.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an avid hobbyist in the kitchen, and you know, if I have anything to complain about in my writing job at the newspaper, it would be that I don't get to cook enough.
Thank
Although
you.
It's kind of a stretch to come up with a complaint for being a dining critic, I have to say.
Now, we didn't go over this earlier, but are you at all prepared to read from the intro of Gentlemen Start Your Ovens?
I have it sitting here with me.
You know, just a minute or two. Give our readers a taste of what you're doing.
Well, part of the introduction, I sort of lay out my manifesto for why I believe that this book matters, I guess. And I say, I believe that every man should know how to cook. I believe that every man should know how to saute a steak and create a buttery sauce from the pan. He should be able to purchase and prepare fish. He should know how to fix pancakes and bacon for the whole house. He should know how to produce a birthday cake, because one day there will be a child or a girl or a good friend in his life who needs one. A well-rounded man is always a good cook. But besides that, men should also want to cook. After all, food matters. It's one of this planet's marquee experiences, right up there with sex and music and love. Men should be all over it. This book is for men and women, like me, who eat without prejudice. We dig fast food, but we love high dinners too. We savor a diner cheeseburger just as much as foie gras. We believe that junk food and haute cuisine belong in the same belly. We like classic, familiar dishes with strong flavors, but we're not afraid to reach out and try new things. Most of all, we know what we want, and we're willing to put forth a little effort to get it. It's like the old saying, if you want something done right, do it yourself. That's exactly how I feel about meatballs. And that's kind of why I wrote the book. I think, you know, essentially a man who can cook is a better man. There's not much arguing with that.
Oh, that's great. This is a very fun book. You're listening to Writers on Writing, and that was Tucker Shaw with Gentlemen, Start Your Ovens, Killer Recipes for Guys, published by Chronicle. Now, let me remind you again that we're in the middle of a fun drive, and if you want to help keep the station going and keep the show going, call 949-UCI, KUCI, and pledge a sum, as little or as much as you want, and you can request all kinds of premiums, plus I will send you a gift. And so call 949-824-5824. Now, I don't know. I mean, your job is writing, and these projects are writing. Are you totally disciplined, or do you ever have problems kind of staying on track with your project and disciplining yourself to do what you needed to do?
Yeah, it can be tough. The nice thing about everything I ate was that it was a very finite idea. I knew exactly what it was going to be, which was take a picture of everything I ate and then write a caption for it. So there were very little side roads that I could get distracted by. And I knew if I could just be disciplined about accomplishing that one task every time I ate something, that if I could just stick to it, then I would do it. When I've written fiction, I've published a few novels for teenagers, for young adult readers, and that's much more difficult for me. And I find that what keeps me on track is to make a plan, make an outline, have a roadmap, and then stick to it no matter what. And sometimes I probably sacrifice a little bit of creativity here and there, but I have to have that plan and not look back, or else it could be an endless process.
Mm-hmm. What else do you write? It sounds like you do a lot of different things.
I have done a lot of different things. Yeah, I love to write. One thing that's never been a problem for me is putting in the hours to write. For several years, I really focused on young adult readers, mostly because it's such a wonderful audience. They are so receptive, and they're predisposed to like you, as opposed to adults, who are sometimes predisposed to want to criticize you. So I wanted to tell stories that I felt would resonate with younger people, and I felt like I had more of an immediate connection with my audience when I was writing for teenagers. I had a book come out last year called The Hookup Artist,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of a teen, I won't say sex romp, but it's sort of a, romantic triangle, mm-hmm. set in Denver, where I'm living now. And I wanted to explore some of the, you know, really raw and clear but confusing emotions that teenagers have surrounding love.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I incorporated a lot of food into the story. Most of it's set in a Mexican restaurant that I imagined, you know, down on the street here.
I love food fiction. I just love food fiction.
Yeah, there's something evocative. I love to read about food.
Mm-hmm.
It always makes me hungry, though.
So with that book and the other, did you finish them before you tried to sell them, or did you get an agent for them and see what was going to happen?
My young adult novels were written through a packager, actually, through the illustrious Alloy Books, which had their own kind of troubles last year with the Kavya Viswanathan scandal. And, you know, my experience with them was actually really great, because I worked with an editor in that group who I felt gave me a lot of leeway to do just sort of, you know, I didn't feel the kinds of pressures that we read about in the media coverage of that story, where I was sort of forced to do a certain plot or create a certain character or deliver a certain number of words or that kind of thing. So my experience was much better than perhaps, you know, what the impression might be. And so I had hand-holding most of the way. I had, you know, the ideas were mine and the work was mine, but I always had a sounding board available. And that, I felt, for me, was key in being able to finish. I mean, there are countless things on my computer that I, you know, sort of languishing there, yelling at me to, like, add some life to them or something. But I'm a guy who loves deadlines. This is why I like working at the newspaper. I know exactly what I have to deliver each week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a luxury, really, to have to say to myself, okay, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe it's good. Mm-hmm. It's good enough. You know what I mean?
So now you have those young adult novels, you have these two food-related books with a third coming out, and you're a food critic. Do you consider yourself a specialist? Are you going for that? Do you see benefit in that? Or do you see yourself kind of, when you become interested in something else, you will freely go to that?
I hope that I will be able to freely go to whatever I'm interested in. I mean, it so happens that food really is my, you know, writing is sort of what excites me, but food really is sort of something that I'm very passionate about. So I'm lucky to be able to work in that arena. I think that it's nice. It's almost like having a deadline. If you have a context for what you're working in, you have some boundaries. For me, that's very helpful, and it actually helps me be more creative because I don't get so lost, and so I can go a little bit deeper when I'm writing about. If I know I'm, for example, writing about a steakhouse here in Denver, that's what I'm going to write about, and I'm going to focus my creativity on nailing that. And for me, that makes it much easier to complete things and feel good about completing them. Mm. And if you can feel good about completing things, there's no better payoff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, these books are awfully fun, and I don't even remember where I found. I think the first one I saw was Everything I Ate, but just thought it was a great concept and just totally creative. So I'm happy to have found you and have you on.
Oh, thank you. You know, I think it struck a note with a lot of people. I guess everybody eats, you know, and food is sort of ultimate common ground. And that's why I love writing about it and doing these projects.
I wonder if you have any words of wisdom for the writers who are listening. Any advice?
It's kind of like what I was saying before. I think it's, for me, every writer is different, obviously, but for me, to set myself some rules and to make my boundaries solid and unchangeable, even if I'm tempted to go off in a different direction, to really kind of crack the whip a little bit, not in terms of the amount of time or effort I put into it, but in terms of staying on the path that I've committed to, then that's how I finish things. And I really do believe that the victory of finishing something, however small, is all the impetus you need to go on to the next thing. And not finishing something and is poison for me, because then I just get frustrated and emotional and watch TV, you know, because it's easier.
Yeah.
But reining, really fencing myself in a little bit is and looking at it as an accomplished, like a task that must be completed, helps me, I think, sort of elevate my creativity in a way. I mean, it almost seems backwards because, in a way, you'd want as much freedom as you can have. But for me, I need to be boxed in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what transformed me from kind of futzing around on the computer to actually finishing projects.
Mm. Good advice.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking about your books.
I appreciate the time, and good luck with the fun drive, I hope.
Me too. Thank you.
I encourage your listeners to really contribute. It's important.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
That was Tucker Shaw speaking to us from Denver, where he works as a food critic and writes these totally creative books. Check them out. Let's see, where are we at? We're going to take a short break. I want to remind you that we are having a fun drive here at the station to keep our keep us up, keep the airwaves going. If you want to call 949-824-KUCI, that would be wonderful, and any sort of pledge will do. We do this only once a year. We're not on twice a year for weeks at a time trying to get people to call and pledge. So this happens 1 week a year, and if you can, please call, make a pledge. I will have a gift for you. When we return, we will be with Kerwin Rockefeller, so please don't go away.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Darling, one month built in a day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky.
For thought-provoking dialogue and talks that penetrate Orange County and beyond, listen to Subversity on KUCI 88.9 FM and webcast at KUCI.org. That's Subversity with your host, Dan Tseng, each Monday at 9 a.m. on KUCI.
Okay. The politics of food. That was good. Same with the Thursday. Okay. Thursday mornings, 9 to 10. Radio for your belly. Okay. Radio for your belly. Yeah. But you're talking in the background. Radio for your belly.
That's nice. Yeah.
I think that's nice.
That's good. Yeah.
Darling, you say you want to write a book? Well, then you must listen to Writers on Writing, darling. Authors, literary agents gabbing and babbling about the art and the business of writing. Thursdays, 5 p.m. Darling, you must. Barbara DeMarco Berici hosts. Yeah, listen, darling.
On KCI-FM in Irvine.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and we're also on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, still here for the second half hour with Kerwin Rockefeller. But before we bring him on, let me remind you that we are in the midst of a fund drive, and we need to keep our station going, and your pledge will help us do that. The number is 949-UCI. KUCI. We accept Visa, MasterCard, American Express. And actually, this show has been on for 10 years here at this station. And without KUCI, who knows whether there would have ever been a Writers on Writing. I don't know. But KUCI made it possible. And if you can help the show stay on the air, that would be stellar. So the number again is 949-UCI-KUCI. Kerwin Rockefeller is up next. He's in the studio, too. Hi, Kerwin.
Hi, Barbara. How are you?
I want to introduce you.
Okay.
Kerwin Rockefeller, PhD, is the Director of Arts and Humanities Continuing Education here at the University of California, Irvine. His expertise includes psychology, visual and performing arts, humanities, and body-mind modalities. He has taught organizational behavior and social psychology at the doctoral level and has consulted with top national and entertainment organizations on the accurate depiction of social and mental health issues, including the Entertainment Industries Council, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, Paramount Pictures, Universal Studios, and Warner Brothers. And has done so much more. I know that he has been involved in the visual arts as well as on this side.
Yes, I was an artist myself for a number of years.
Yeah.
Performer, actor, did lots of TV commercials.
Interesting.
So a lot of stuff.
But you're here today to talk about that, but to also talk about visualize confidence, how to use guided imagery to overcome self-doubt, published by New Harbinger Publications. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here with you.
So tell me about this book. How did this book come about?
Well, the book came about in a very interesting sort of circuitous way. For a number of years, well, I love books. I love books. I've loved books my whole life. And when I finished my PhD, my doctoral program a couple of years ago, about 15 years ago or so, I knew that I had a couple of books in me. And so I spent months and years writing query letters, doing proposals, talking to people, book coaches, taking writing classes, how to write a proposal class, all sorts of things. And I just didn't have much luck. I got a little bit frustrated. And to be real honest with you, I gave up. But always I kind of had in the back of my mind that I wanted to write. And I kind of, my path was that instead of focusing on making something that was sellable, that I focused on what I wanted to write.
Hmm.
And that was about creative visualization, the power of creativity, our imagination. And so I really just delved into that. I delved into what was important to me. And lo and behold, one day I was asked to give a presentation at a state conference. So I did this presentation on guided imagery and visualization. And at the end of the presentation, this man walks up to me and he says, "Hi, you want to write a book?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I'm a publisher. Let's do it."
From New Harbinger.
From New Harbinger. The publisher of New Harbinger walked up to me at the end of my presentation and said, "I really like what you're doing." Mm. And, you know, I kind of think that was really interesting because I had decided, I made the decision
right.
to focus on the work that I was doing and focus on every aspect of the work. And then when I presented it, he said, "I really like how you're doing this." My next question was, "Do I need an agent?" And he said, "Not if you got a publisher."
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the start of it. And that actually was 2 years ago that came about.
That really, that says a lot for again, not paying attention to so much the marketplace or what you think is going to sell as opposed to what you want to do.
Well, I had talked to many agents and writing coaches and writers and so many people, and they said, "Well, you should do this or you should do that. Or I can sell you as of this, or I can sell you as of that." And I thought it didn't really ring true to me.
Right.
you know, I don't need to be the next guru. That was not my intention. That was not what I was interested in. What I cared about was the topic, and what I cared about was the information and the topic that I thought, that I knew from personal experience, could help people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always kept that image, if you will, I kept that image in my mind of creating a work that had depth and continuing to hone my own work and my knowledge, so that I thought, well, someday, perhaps, it'll come out.
Right.
And so I think it is important to focus on the work, focus on the writing. I've been a writer for a number of years. I've written a screenplay, like everybody, and just always loved reading and loved books and just loved the whole industry. But I just became really clear that I needed to focus my intention on what I wanted to say, not what would sell.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the next pizzazz? You know, what would be the hook, but what was really true and authentic about the work.
And what's interesting, too, to me about this book and about the fact that you wrote it is that, as we said just a few minutes ago, you were a performer, an artist, and so you've been on that side.
Yeah, I've been on the creative side as well, and I know that everything that has a creative life to it, or every creative endeavor, has its own special life. It'll take its own form, and so nothing was ever wasted. Nothing that I ever did, or the research that I did, or the writings, or the proposals. And I'll have to say also, none of the meetings that I had with agents, with writers, none of that was wasted. It was all doing my homework. And when I did my homework and focused on the work and what my intention was, then when the publisher literally walked up to me, I was ready.
You were ready.
I was ready for it.
You're listening to Writers on Writing, and I'm with Kerwin Rockefeller, author of Visualized Confidence, published by New Harbinger Publications. So, you know, writers listen to this show. Mostly writers listen to this show. Probably a lot of readers, too, who would like to write. A lot of writers have trouble pursuing the project they want to pursue, or being worried about the marketing aspect, being worried about publishing. All of these worries, probably more than anything else, help to block writers and make it impossible to write that which you would really love to write, to get on paper. So what do you say to these writers who are blocked? I mean, first of all, when writers think they are blocked, is that an actual occurrence or not? And what do you do about it?
No, it's a real occurrence. When the block is there, the block is there. You can't sort of ignore it. But I want to bring up something else first before we go into that. And that's, the book is about visualization, guided imagery. We all have movies in our heads. That's kind of how human beings are made. And the most effective way that everybody uses imagery is worry. Just imagine worrying about something. And when you worry, you think about all the things that could happen, might get in your way, could get in your way. You're not thinking about things that are actually happening. It takes you out of the present moment and you future trip. Mm-hmm. You think about, oh, well, how can I do this or how can I do that? And usually when we worry, it's about the things that won't happen. So I want to say everybody uses imagery very naturally because we all worry. Now, what happens when you worry, you're giving energy to that block. And so it really is something that comes up. And so when I've worked with writers and myself in the past about writer's block, I say, first of all, you have to honor what the block is, because it's probably or could be trying to tell you something. And then, since we all naturally use imagery, I say, let's imagine the block being removed. Let's imagine the final outcome. I used to imagine myself signing autographs. I would actually go to Barnes and Nobles and sit there with a cup of coffee and get a piece of paper that was blank and sign, "Thank you for buying my book."
Mm-hmm.
And so I was starting to act as if I actually had a book out there.
Now, when would you do that? How long ago is that?
Oh, a couple of years ago.
So it was before the book was even...
The book was an image or an idea in my mm-hmm. head. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword. I knew that there was an end product. I knew that there was an end to it. But I also knew that there had to be the process to get me to there.
Right.
So I kind of worked both ends at the same time, just sitting down mm-hmm. and just acknowledging, being grateful for something having been
but
finished.
But you did that before you had a book, which is
I did
a really
that before I had
thing.
A book. Yeah, yeah. I just knew it was there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for people that are having writing blocks, I might give you a little kind of quick exercise
yeah,
right now
that.
If you don't mind. If you're listening on the radio here, just... Allow your eyes to close.
If you're driving, you might pull over.
And if you're driving, you might want to pull over. Don't do this if you're driving or operating machinery.
You can listen to the podcast later. Yeah.
But take a big, deep breath. Inhale and exhale. And as you allow yourself to be kind of calm and relaxed and peaceful, allow an image to form in your mind of the writer's block. Could be a wall. Could be a ball and chain around your ankle. Could be a boulder. Could be a mountain. Just allow an image to form that represents for you the blockage, the obstacle, not being able to find your way. And you already have that image. It just popped into your head. It pops in very naturally. Now allow yourself a little bit of communication with that image. If that image could talk to you or could communicate to you in some way, what would it say? Would it say something like, slow down? You're not ready? Hold on? You're forgetting about X, Y, or Z? And just allow your imagination to talk to you, to communicate to you, to feel it in a very deep body sense of what this image is trying to communicate. And then gently let that go. Now allow yourself to imagine that you are communicating with it. What would you want to say to it? How would you communicate with it? And begin to have a dialogue. Begin to have a dialogue with the image. And as you have a dialogue, this is where the power of the creative imagination comes in. See how the image begins to transform. And when it transforms, right now, what insight do you have about yourself and your creative process in doing your own work? And when you're ready, allow your eyes to open. And when you come back to full waking consciousness, you know you have some insight. And that insight will help you take new action. It could be that the blockage wanted more time. It wanted you to slow down and honor something in your life. Maybe it's just not ready to come out yet. And if the writing isn't ready to come, what do you need to do to nurture yourself? To take care of yourself? To structure yourself in such a way that the writing will flow easily and gently?
That's very nice. That was Kern Rockefeller doing a guided visualization. His book is Visualize Confidence, published by New Harbinger. I still believe in that. I think that, like you were saying, with worry, we're so quick to visualize all the horrible things.
Yeah.
But when we put just a little bit of energy into what we want
yeah.
and where we want to go, it's really powerful stuff, and we're either reluctant to do that because what if it doesn't happen?
Well, it's human nature. I mean, it's mm-hmm. human nature. We always want to be prepared for what's going to happen tomorrow. But, you know, I always tell people, if you can imagine, here's that word again, imagine all the energy and the time that you spent in negative worrying, negative imagery.
Right.
And if you could turn that around and use all that same amount of energy and time, mm-hmm. to imagine a good outcome.
Right.
To tell yourself, I can do it. Of course I can write. This is worthwhile, good stuff. I can do it. Just imagine the difference you'd have in your life.
Mm.
But it's human nature. We worry about all the what ifs.
Yeah, we sure do. You're listening to Writers on Writing, and again, I'm here with Kerwin Rockefeller today, author of Visualize Confidence, published by New Harbinger. We do have a fun drive, and I'd love to hear the phone ring. 949-UCI-KUCI. Tax deductible, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, premiums, gifts, all kinds of good things. Mostly you'll keep us on the air. Talk about, Kerwin, talk about the writing of the book. Are you a disciplined person? Do you write the same, would you write the same time every day? And did you have an outline? And
you know, I'm pretty disciplined, and I usually would start early in the morning, you know, and I would just do a brain drain. I would just write. Hmm. Actually, it only took me 3 months to write the book. And that was just letting everything come out without any regard to what came out, the order, the sequencing. But then it took me 9 months to revise it. Editing, re-editing, rewriting, moving things around. And I think because I had spent so much time with the material, I knew it really well. Mm-hmm. So as we all know, writing is rewriting. To write the book was really kind of a simple brain drain. Mm-hmm. I just kind of all came out.
So what was the revision process for you? Did you have readers, or did you, how did that go for you?
You know, I shared it with a lot of my personal and professional relationships, people that I have, mm-hmm. you know, that are in the mental health area. Mm-hmm. But I just showed it to anybody because I wanted it to be really readable. I wanted it to be really accessible. I didn't want technical, psychological jargon. And I was really fortunate that the New Harbinger copy editor was really a crackerjack. I mean, she went line by line by line. And it was really a wonderful experience because I got to work with someone else who knows the process and the technique of writing. And so she would ask me questions. Well, what do you mean here? And it forced me to revise. It forced me to say to myself, am I being clear? Am I being really organized here? What needs to come next? And so that nine-month process was really a joy. It was just really great. I had a great time, but pretty disciplined early in the morning and then sometimes in the evening as well. And I would kind of find myself just letting myself go to whatever part of the book felt like it needed the most work, mm-hmm. but trying to be on a regular schedule.
Hmm. 5 days a week, 7 days a week?
7 days a week.
7 days a week.
Yeah, every spare minute I had, I was writing. Yeah. If I wasn't writing, I was reading. If I wasn't reading, I would take out a pen and I'd mark things up mm-hmm. and then think about it and move a couple of paragraphs. I think what actually, my original start of the book, the first chapter, or I think the first sentence, I think that's now around page 25, mm-hmm. you know. And then I think I also wrote the end first. I knew where I wanted to go with the book. I kind of knew where I wanted to start. And where I wanted to end up, and everything else was just taking one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, the subtitle again, well, the title, Visualize Confidence, with the subtitle being How to Use Guided Imagery to Overcome Self-Doubt. What is this with self-doubt? I mean, where does that even come from? Is it just like, I mean, because people who have good childhoods doubt themselves.
You know, it's just human nature. Where self-doubt comes from is what we call in the psychology profession, the inner critic. Hmm. And we all have an inner critic. It's just part of being a human being. And the inner critic is that little voice in your head, sometimes a loud voice in your head that says, you can't do this. Who do you think you are? Well, you're too this, or you're not enough that. Or you're too much this and not enough over here. It's like, well, who do you think you are? Just give it up and give it a rest. And we have to learn to quiet that inner critic. We have to learn to quiet it. And then once we learn to quiet it, it can actually transform to be an inner confidence coach, which helps us attain our goals. Hmm. But it's human nature.
Are there tricks? Are there ways that you can trick yourself out of self-doubt and into self-confidence?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the tricks that I use is to say, when someone says, well, this, this, and this, and this, and this, this, and this, and that, and I say, so what? So what if that happens? What's right. the worst that can happen? So what, you don't get the job? So what? You'll live. You'll get another job. Right. So what if you can't write this morning? Mm-hmm. So what? You'll write tomorrow morning. So a little trick, and it really helps to put things in perspective, mm-hmm. is to just say, so what? it takes some of the pressure off as well.
Mm. I like this chapter title, Trying Out New Ways of Being.
And really then, important.
And you start the chapters with a quote. This one is by Jack Nicklaus. I never hit a shot, not even in practice, without having a very sharp, in-focus picture of it in my head.
That's really important. You know, you have an image in your mind. Again, we talk about the negative images, but have a positive image in your mind that says, I can do this. You know, I often say, you know, you know what the number one self-doubt fear is, and that's public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So I say to people when I'm working with them, imagine that you can hear the applause after your brilliant speech. Imagine you can hear the pop of a champagne cork. Imagine someone toasting you and saying, job well done. Imagine someone patting you on the back. Imagine walking through and people want your autograph. So again, take all the time and the energy that you would normally spend with the worrying part of it and project yourself into a movie that's about the good stuff,
mm-hmm.
the good things.
Hmm. This is so interesting, you know, I mean, because I just see this all the time in writers who... one of the things writers use a lot to stop themselves from writing or from really pursuing their dreams of whatever it might be, finishing the novel, a short story, whatever is, I'm too old.
I'm too old.
And I hear this from people right. who are
right.
30.
Right, right. Again, people say,
and older, but yeah.
I'm too this, or I'm not enough right. of that. I don't have the right education. I'm, you know, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm tall, I'm short. So many things like that. And again, it's just very much human nature for, you know, when that inner critic starts to put ourselves down. You know, here's another little trick.
Okay.
And I talk about this in the book, and I call this baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. You don't have to write the book in one day. Write one sentence.
Right.
Write one word. Just start. You know, you talk about people who want to fulfill their dreams, and that's a lot of what I do here at the university, is I help people fulfill their dreams. They say, I want to write the great American novel or a screenplay or whatever. And I say, just start.
Mm-hmm.
Start with something that's manageable, that's big enough to matter, but small enough to manage. And that's the baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. A child has to crawl before they can walk.
Sure.
So the fiction novel, the nonfiction novel, whatever you're writing there, it's not going to pop out of your head or out of the computer printer just automatically. Just start. And I think that's where people have some of the most difficulty. You just have to start. Here's another sort of analogy. People want to go to the gym and exercise. You know the trick to help yourself start exercising?
Mm-mm.
Put your gym clothes on. When you put your gym right. clothes on, you can't help but do a stretch
right.
or something
right.
like that. It's just take a little step that is meaningful to you, that sets you on the right direction that you want to go in. And then you know what? Take another step.
Mm.
And take another step. And before you know it, you'll have your book.
You have a chapter here, chapter 3, Reclaiming Your Confidence, and the first subhead is, it all starts with a belief.
Yeah, you know, it all starts with a belief. You know, beliefs are so possible. Beliefs are so important. Henry Ford once said, whether you believe you can or you can't, you're probably right. So it does all start with a belief. If you believe you can... And while I can't guarantee success, I can pretty much tell you you're going to have a lot better chance at succeeding if you believe, I can't, it's too late. You know what? It's not too late.
Right.
There's always another day. You always have a fresh start. You always have a chance to begin anew. But take that baby step.
Kerwin, I just looked at the clock, and it's time, and double take because I thought we had lots of time left.
I know. I thought we had lots of time, but that's good.
It's been great having you. Any last words for the writers listening?
You know, I would just reiterate what I just said. If you believe you can, you know what? You probably can. If you believe you can't, you know what? You probably can.
Yeah.
Take a step. Take the first step. You don't have to write a chapter. Write a paragraph. You may not have to write a paragraph. Write a sentence. Start with the first word.
Mm.
And then just keep going.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You know, I know you've signed a lot of books. Will you sign my book?
Oh, absolutely. I sure will.
Oh, we've just been spending a wonderful half hour with Kerwin Rockefeller. His book is Visualize Confidence, published by New Harbinger. And just a wonderful book. Check it out. And it's so true. You just have to believe that you can do it and then learn some techniques. If you're finding yourself not pulling it off, read the book. Learn some of these techniques to help yourself out, because time is slipping away. And I know from personal experience, every day that I'm not doing something that I really want to do, I feel a little discouraged, and the discouragement mounts.
And it's easy to get discouraged. Yeah. I mean, you know, the discouragement just starts to mount and mount and mount, but you can turn that around in an instant. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is start.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
And all of you out there, thank you for being here with us. My website is penonfire.com. You can go there to learn who's going to be on the show. And if you want to be on the weekly email list, just shoot me an email from that site, and I'll get it. And I'm going to leave you with a quote by Edgar Rice Burroughs, who said, "I have been successful probably because I have always realized that I knew nothing about writing and have merely tried to tell an interesting story entertainingly." Thanks for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. I'll see you next time.